Morning, MCC. Please be seated. Unless y'all want to stand for the whole sermon, and I would not recommend it. I think it's important to be comfortable. I love being with you. I actually had a wedding in Dripping Springs on Friday evening, and so I had to stay overnight, and Karen had sent out her thing, can someone come preach on these days? And I said, I'll be 30 minutes away. So you got me because of a wedding in Dripping Springs. You can thank those guys for that. But so it's good to be here with you, and I love these passages because I'm going to share with you some parts of my personal story and how it's helped me connect to God, how it's helped me connect to God in times when I wasn't sure it was possible. I don't know if you've been in those places in your life, but, you know, that's just not possible for that to be true. And so I want to start with scripture readings themselves and talk about this reading from Mark, because we often leave off that last verse, that next verse there. You know, Jesus is baptized by John, comes up out of the water, and we celebrate that the heavens break open, and it's not a flood like in the times of Noah. It's a gift of the Spirit. The heavens break open, the Spirit falls and lands on Jesus, and then there's a voice. And the voice said, this is my own, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased. And we all go, yeah, we know that, that's true. This is my own, my beloved, in whom I'm well pleased. And I want to challenge you this day to realize that that voice was spoken to each and every one of you at your baptism. That voice continues to get spoken to you. Your name, it gets called each and every time. You are my own, my beloved, in you I am well pleased. Problem is, sometimes we forget. And we also definitely forget this next verse. Then the Spirit sent him into the wilderness to be tested. Oh, joy. I'm up, I'm down. I hear the voice of God, and now I get thrown into the wilderness with nothing to eat and, you know, just horrible times right there at the minute in that moment. Life can just jerk you around like that, like a roller coaster, up one minute and down the next. Well, it happened to Jesus, so feel like you're in good company. You know, he hears that blessing from God and then gets thrown in the wilderness to make his way. And together, I call these Jesus's coming out story. You know that? That's what they are. First, God names him, you know, and then he goes in the wilderness and he comes out of the wilderness. And what does he say? This is who I am and this is who I'm not. You know, some people want to be one way, a military leader. Some people want to be another way, popular. And Jesus said, that's not who I am. Any of you had to come out of a wilderness and say to someone, that's not who I am. This is who I am. And so together, that blessing from God in that wilderness moment and coming back to tell the people, yeah, I'm here. God wants me here, but I'm not what you're expecting. So let's start on this road together. And so I appreciate that so much, because when I first knew God was blessing me for ministry in this world, I knew that God had a sense of humor. And I wasn't quite ready to laugh yet. Because in the same moment, at the same time, two truths became clear to me. And I was 16 years old, and I was going to a church in Southwest Houston. And the two truths came to me was this, Troy, you think boys are mighty fine, and I think you like men. At 16 years old, it was a truth. You know, someone had to smack me over the head with it, but it was a truth. And then the second truth was, and I'm calling you to be a minister in the United Methodist Church. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. Thank you for those two truths at the same time. You know, you are called to serve and you're gay. And in the Methodist Church, that just doesn't work. You know, that doesn't work. Well, I spent, you know, 55 years of my life there, and I spent the last 6 years with you, and I'm very happy that I've made it through that journey to be here at this place in this time. But my little 16-year-old self didn't know what to do with those truths. You know, at 16 years old, I couldn't cope with maybe you're called to be a pastor and you're also gay. And so, my goodness gracious, what do? You just hide. And so I didn't take action on anything, not until I was about to graduate from college. I worked at home. I worked and lived at home when I was going to college. So I got my 4-year degree. I wasn't ready to go to work yet. So I went back in and got my master's degree. And still lived at home, paid a little bit of rent at home, had a part-time job, and I was able to graduate without debt, something that's unrealized again these days. Y'all remember that time? Graduate from college without debt. That was amazing. So my last semester of that degree, living at home, my mom says, Troy, I need to talk to you. And that's not usually good words to my ears. I need to talk to you. She walked me into our den at the time, which was Harvest Gold and brown and orange sculpted shag carpeting, and had a green tweed love seat in there that we had our important conversations on. So she said, "Troy, I need to talk to you," and we went to the green tweed sofa. So she took a breath and she said, "I believe you are experimenting with homosexuality." I thought, man, mom's in tune. I had accepted my first actual date with a man for that Saturday night. I hadn't gone on the date yet. "I think you're experimenting with homosexuality." Well, maybe in a little bit. You know, not quite yet. And so, but it was a good phrased question, right? Not that you are, not that I know, but I believe this is what's going on in your life. And so I thought, wow, I don't even have to hide. I can just tell mom. This is great. And so I could say yes. And she followed up immediately with, "Well, I'll call the pastor and tell him why you can no longer help with the youth groups and let him know why you won't be coming to church anymore. I'll call your sisters and let them know why you're moving out of the house. And I'll call your aunts and uncles and everyone so we can all put you on the prayer chain and pray for you at this hard and difficult time in your life. And you need to be out of the house today. I'll call your father and he'll help you. He'll come home and he'll help you with your bags." And so in one moment from this high, I can be free, to this low, you're going to lose your church. You're going to lose your way of service. You're going to lose your family. You're going to lose your mom, the one through whom I most clearly knew God's love. You have to move out. Luckily, I had work, so I wasn't going to become homeless. And I grew up in Houston, had friends, so I wasn't going to sleep on the streets that night. But the journey was horrible. I spent time on the little sofa I bought for my one-bedroom apartment and wouldn't get off of it. Had a lap blanket that I would pull over my head and just spend hours there. I don't know if you've been in any of those places in life where you just have to grieve, and there's not anything that's going to pull you out of that grief. You just have to experience it. So my friends from high school, and some of us had followed each other in college, called me. One of them hadn't heard from me, and she asked, "What was I doing?" Jeanette was her name, my best friend in high school. We were like Mutt and Jeff. You know, I'm this tall, you can tell. I was breast level on Jeanette. You know, she was up here. And not only was she that tall, but she also had big, blonde Texas hair. And so she was up here, and then her hair was up there, you know, trying to reach to Jesus. And this was in about 1981, 2003, you know, finishing that degree. And she said, "Let's go camping," because that's what we would do. We would go into the wilderness and find a river and canoe down it. And so for that trip, about six of us, her fiance at the time, me and some others, got three canoes and went to the Guadalupe River and started canoeing. And it was fun. I loved doing it with Jeanette because she had been one of those Girl Scouts superb, and she would be in the back of the canoe, so I didn't have to do any work other than listen and tell me, paddle that side, paddle this side, and she made it through the whole way. First day, non-eventful, you know, we made it like superstars down the river. Some of our people had crashed and collapsed and, you know, and got soaked, but not us. We were the ace canoe. The ace canoe. So we slept that first night and got up the next morning, and lo and behold, Jeanette had a miracle. Her big blonde Texas hair was the best it had ever been, and it was on the second day of camping. So we knew it was a miracle, second day of camping, waking up with the best big blonde Texas hair you could have. And Jeanette was dedicated. This miracle is going to last all day. She was dedicated to making that miracle last all day. And so we were willing that day, or she was, I just followed along, to sacrifice all our fellow canoers for her hair. So we positioned our canoe behind all of the others. And so we could tell if they tumped over not to go that way. You know, and so we were doing fine. Everyone was doing fine. And then we got to this one place in the river. Later I learned out it was called the Devil's Horseshoe, where all the water crashed in. You know, and we watched, it looked something like this, that might actually be it. like something like this. And so we watched, and ahead of our group, we saw other groups, and all of them, one, the other, no one was making it through without tumping over and losing all their stuff down the river. You know, their soda cans, beer cans, ice chests, everything floating away, trying to catch it. And so there's an eddy over to the side, and so Jeanette backed us up into the eddy because she wants more information. Our friends go in, and they have the same thing happen to them that's happened to all the others we've seen. I'm sitting there for a while, so I notice up the river on the side, there's a man in a folding chair, and he has his kids on these long leashes. He's sending them out in the river to grab stuff as people's stuff falls over. And then I watched closer and saw this one kid picked up a Coke can and threw it away and picked up a beer and ran back up on stage on the beach. So his parents had him trained which cans to look for and to bring over to the side of the road. We were in that for a while. And then finally there was one canoe that went just a little bit different. There was a little side river on the side over here around a tree that you could just make it through on. And the canoe did that, and they stayed dry. And so Jeanette said, that's the way we're going. And so we went that way. We made it fine, finished the second day successful. We're the ace canoe again. You know, it's a beautiful day, but we haven't gotten in the water yet because the miracle of the big, beautiful blonde Texas hair must last. You know, all of this is going on, and I haven't told any of my friends about being kicked out of the house. They knew I had an apartment, but they didn't know why I moved. I hadn't told any of my friends about my mom's conversation with me. I hadn't told any of my friends even then that I was gay because I really was just about to go on my first adult date. You know, so they didn't even know that. And I got tired of it all in that moment, in that evening. And so I walked out into the middle of the river. We were camped right next to a spillway. And the water was going over the river just about 6 inches. Just flowing on downstream. So I said, that looks pretty. I'm going to go sit in the middle of that. So I went and I walked out in the middle of the spillway and sat in the middle of it. And that felt good. And so after a while, I said, well, let me lay back. And so I laid back down. My head's upriver, so the water's hitting my head and flowing down and around. And it is cold. Some of you know that river. It is cold. But I was willing to tough it out. And it had been a hot day. And I enjoyed it. And so I was laying back in it and closed my eyes and enjoying it. And all of a sudden, it felt warm. Didn't feel cold anymore. Felt warm. My whole body felt warm. And then the next instant, I was above my body looking down at it. Never happened to me in my life before. What's going on? It's above my body looking down at it. And the warmth. And I felt love. I felt love like I never felt before. I swear, if there'd been a voice that moment in time, it would have said, Troy, you are my own. You are my beloved, and I am well pleased. I didn't get the voice that day, but what I knew walking out of that river was I was loved by God. Walking in, I didn't know what was going to be with this church, with these people who were kicking me out. Whatever was going on with them was just going to be. But walking out, I knew God loved me. That warmth and that light that surrounded me, I was sure of that love. Sometimes in that moment of depression and grief, when we think likely that we can have God connected to us at all, it's just not possible. God somehow will keep on breaking through, as he did that day for me. I then went on to seminary. So that's 3 degrees, you know. Took me a while to get to work, but it's three degrees. You know, went on to seminary and accepted a job as a therapist, a counselor, right at the 3 years into the HIV/AIDS epidemic. The day after my ordination, I both married a couple and buried 2 people at the same time. And that's what it was like for the next 7-8 years. You know, burials all the time, sometimes in the same day, definitely in the same week. You know, I didn't expect that my first year of being a pastor, I would have expertise. You know, I'd be the go-to person for funerals and for grief work in Houston, Texas. But it was a specialty that I really didn't ask for, but was necessary and came at the time that it was needed. And so we did this great, good work, important work in our MCC churches, this church. People didn't have another choice. You know, we were handling the whole city's grief, the whole city's challenge with people with HIV and AIDS before others finally caught on and began to help. So this went on for some years, and there was a moment in time when I had even stopped writing in my clergy record book. You would write in the names of those you baptize, the weddings you do, the funerals you do. And I got to that point. I look back at it now, and I can see when it got too much because I stopped writing the names in the book. I kept putting the bulletins in, but I stopped writing the names. And my heart was protected. I was numb. You know, at that time, my mom and I had reconciled, and my mom said, "Troy, to get your attention, you just have to be dying." She was angry. I didn't make it over for lunch that much anymore. You know, what do I have to do, die to get you to come over? Life was really hard, and I was numb, and I wasn't feeling. I could do a funeral service. I could do all those things expected of me and not feel. And so luckily, some friends from Kansas were planning a vacation, and I just said, if I don't have to make any decisions, I will go with you. If I can just tag along and go where you go, I will go with you. Before I knew, they were going to Egypt, and so I went with them to Egypt, and I tacked on 3 days in Israel on my own after. And when I got there, I got deadly ill. I didn't know it was deadly ill, but I got deadly ill. My appendix had started to perforate, and it took some time for that to fully happen, but it had started. And I was in Cairo in the shadow of the pyramids at the hotel, not leaving the room, missing my chance to walk through the pyramids, waiting for some doctors to come. And one finally came, and they prescribed something for me that's illegal in the United States. I really don't know what it was, but it made me feel better. You know, felt good enough that I got on a cruise down the Nile the next day. Appendix was perforating, but felt okay in that moment in time because there was enough pills to last for the whole boat ride. And then I did on my own the next 3 days in Israel. And it was a bus tour, and we went around to all of the holy places, the travel places that you go to when you're in Israel. And with my luck, my travel agent had tried to be kind, and I don't think he realized it wasn't, but he had put me on a bus full of retired Jewish grandparents, whole bus, retired Jewish grandparents, and they had, some of them had like adult grandchildren with them, but mostly it was all retirees, and it was meant for Jewish people to be a part of it. And so when they're reading down the list of the people on the bus, they get to me, and they're saying, "Are you here, you here, you here?" And then they go, "Reverend Troy Tresh." I'm the outed Gentile right before we start the bus trip. You know, so they look at me, and then every time something Greek came on a wall, they wanted me to tell them what it meant, you know. And I was not good at Greek in seminary, and still am not, but I could make out the words on the walls. That was easy enough. But we went to all these sites, and this one family kind of took care of me, this Jewish grandmother and her two adult daughters. I think she picked me because she thought I might be good for one of her daughters to start off with, you know. And then on the second day of the trip, that daughter starts telling me about her gay friends in New York. She must have picked up on something. Might have been my safari hat and my sharp outfit, you know. I don't know. But she starts talking about that, and so I thought, that's good. And so I talked a little bit about the work I did in the HIV work and how I was running away. You know, and so we went to the place where traditionally they say Jesus is born, this grotto. And so the grandmother comes up to me and says, "This is a holy place for you. This is important." And I looked at it, and it's like marble slabs with brass in it and then more gold. And I thought, yeah, not so much. Not so much. We went to the upper room and went upstairs, and it was pretty, you know, and she came up to me again. This is the holy place for you. And I said, not so much. And we went on this way, and then we went to some of the Jewish sites, and we went to the Holocaust Museum, and we went through all of those places, and I kept looking because I knew many, many gay people had been killed in the Holocaust, and I wondered if they were going to say anything about it. And we went through row and row and all these places, and we finally got to the last place. There was a picture, and it said nothing on the side except the people had pink triangles on their uniforms. There we are. I'm seen in this place. We went from the Holocaust Museum to the Children's Holocaust Museum. Beautiful space. They had one candle, but it was reflected in so many ways, it looked like there were thousands of candles in the space. And they were calling names quietly on a recording in the background. Jewish grandmother had gotten up to the rail and everyone in the bus had gone on. And I was behind her and she was clutching the rail and she wouldn't let go. And her body was shaking and she just couldn't let go. In that moment in time, she stood there, she cried and she cried. And I just stayed beside her until she finished. And it was a good while. And then we walked out to the bus together, arm in arm. The next stop was the place where they take you at the end, so you can make your commitment to the land and to plant a tree. So they gave us these trees to plant, and everyone found their space to plant their tree and to dig it in and to put some water on it. And I thought, my tree looks pretty weak already, but I would really, really like it to survive. It's important to me that it live. And so I put rocks around it, trying to protect it from whatever else was going to be coming around. Made sure I watered it well, and I was sitting there looking at it. And then all of a sudden, Grandma taps me on the shoulder and says, "Name every leaf." And I looked at her and said, "Name every leaf for those people that you've been burying. Put a name on every leaf." And I got mad, I got angry. She was being kind, but I got angry. I said, "I know too many names for this little tree." And I named all the leaves once. Named them a second time. I follow instructions pretty good. I named them a third time. And just started bawling, stayed there exhausted with my little tree. And then the words came to me that I'd been saying for 8 years at funerals. And the river of life flows through the city. And on each side of the river are the trees of life who produce their fruit each month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. I didn't hear that whole verse, but this time I heard. Could be perforated appendix poisoning, but I believe it was God. Simply say, the leaves are for healing. 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 Finally, in time, I was able to get up and head towards the bus. I got up and I turned to walk around. And Grandma's waiting for me. She's been praying for me the whole time. Been praying for me the whole time. Grabbed me by my arm, and we walked hand in hand back to the bus. It's one of those wonderful biblical people who I don't even know her name. And she saved me that day. So what am I trying to tell you these days with these stories from my life? I'm trying to tell you can run halfway around the world, and God's going to find you. Oh, yeah, you can run to Central Texas and try to stay out of the water all you want, but God may be asking you to dive right in because God is going to meet you right there. No matter how much you protect your heart, God's still there ready to take you home. No matter how it looks, relationships can be healed. All in God's good time. And if we're open to that love to come in and heal it. So who are you today, Austin MCC? In this series, Mission Incredible. Mission Incredible. How are you going to connect to God this week? You can do it while you're washing the dishes, mowing the yard. You can do it all the time. If you just, for that moment, breathe just a second and invite God into whatever it is you're doing. And I'm here to warn you. The longer you keep God away, man, you just get to suffer more. So let God bowl you over right now. Amen.